Listening to KPFT Houston 90.1 FM. Stay tuned for Technology Bites next.
Following program contains language and audio images which may be found disturbing and may not be suitable for your snotty-nosed little brat
who probably cusses like a sailor behind your back anyway.
Parental discretion is advised.
Greetings and welcome to this edition. I don't have a name for it. It's the edition that shall not be named of Technology Bites.
Name it.
Oh! I said its name.
You named it.
That's pretty meta.
Welcome to Technology Bites. I'm assuming my microphone is live. I can't hardly hear myself. I'll turn my headphones up. Welcome to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Plicted.
I'm Barrett.
And he's
Groovehouse.
Flawless entry.
Yeah, don't jinx it, man.
My chair's low.
My chair's low.
This is a new chair and it's low.
It's low, low, low. So one of our listeners in New York that listens to us on our sister station or one of our affiliates out there, commented on the show where he says, enjoy the show. As to the style word processor app, trip in the Wayback Machine may not be required. I downloaded both versions of the app from the website and installed them on my 2003 PowerPC iMac running OS 10 Tiger in the classic environment OS 9 emulation. I didn't try to put it to the ultimate test, but it opens up and seems to run. And by the way, when Apple replaced the G4 chip in desktops with the G5, their publicity referred to it as the new G5 chip as a result of a collaboration with IBM. Just to be thorough, G5 ran too hot and demanded too much power to be used in laptops. It's rumored that, this failure led to Apple making the move to Intel. And he wrote another comment. Wayback 2, I just tried out the version of Style designated for OS 10. It runs in Tiger, but not on the Intel Mac. That is my main machine. It is confusing that the OS 10 version has an OS 9 appearance. It does run. So somebody's out there is paying attention.
Oh, yeah. We like that.
All right. Well, we're glad you could tune in. We are online at geekradio.com. You can catch the podcast there. You can also get all the vital information about how to contact us, who we are, what the hell we're doing. There's also an announcement up for the upcoming Geek Gathering, which is a week from Friday. And we'll be needing that Geek Gathering because I think we start fundraiser next week. I don't know if it starts with us or how that's working out.
I've got my fingers crossed it's the next day. And by a conversation I had in the lobby, I think it might be late next week and not Tuesday or Wednesday, I'm hoping.
Well, that would be something. But anyway, we do have a fundraiser coming up, so we'll be wanting this Geek Gathering to, you know, get ourselves psychologically prepared.
We get it on the first day.
I was about to go look. Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We get the first day. First shift, first wave.
Yeah.
We are the lead.
We are the world. We have that coming up.
How many can you hold up? How many fingers we're actually doing it for? How many weeks?
Do you know how many?
I don't want to scare our listeners away.
See, that I don't know.
Okay. Don't know. All right. Well, you know, last couple of months it's been little sparse on people just calling in to ask computer questions. I can only imagine what it's going to be like when we ask you for money.
Yay!
All right. Visit us online at geekradio.com. You can also hang out with us at IRC, irc.cuckoo.com. In the channel Tech Bytes. If you don't have your own IRC client or you manage to download one and can't figure it out, you can always go to geekradio.com and click on the link to join the IRC on the website. 3 weeks, Groovehouse is holding up. In the clever way where he does an almost an okay sign and holds up those other three fingers, which, you know.
It's the alt three.
The I made you look.
Just have to be careful.
Oh, hey, watch out.
Don't do it that way.
Hey now. Them fighting hand signs.
Don't be flashing gang signs.
No, don't do that in Brazil.
Yeah.
That's very inappropriate.
That's why you're enjoying
if you
it.
Do it if you do it this way, I think it's okay. Because
that's okay.
It means okay. Yeah. But if you do it that way.
That just means oh.
That's not. It's kind of like if you do this, it means peace. But if you do that in England,
this
it doesn't mean
donut.
Peace.
This is a donut. This is goatsy. All right. So if you want to be on the air with us tonight.
I think you need to be able to make your thumb and forefinger larger for it to be goatsy.
713-526-5738 if you want to be on the air with us a little bit later on. We'll be taking your calls. What do you think about Barrett time tonight? I just want to kind of
There's actually no prepared Barrett time. I came pretty much straight from working.
No hope.
Here you go. There's no hope.
I have it.
I'm on 3 hours of sleep.
We don't need it now.
No, but yeah, but, well, the listeners can't tell, but this is a donut. This is goatsy.
Oh,
you
so
need
glad.
A logarithm, yeah, to compute
I'm
the
so
difference
glad
in size that
clicked
and just flashed up. All these are completely appropriate for the airwaves.
Although, you know, that was just slightly reminiscent of the village people there. Because he makes his...
Does your mom know you make those hand signs? She does now.
You hug your mother with those hand signs? All right. Well, we're in a good mood. At least we've got that going for us. Weather's nice here. It's a little warm, but,
that's,
you know,
awesome.
Kind of dry and kind of pleasant to be outside and stuff. So,
if you think it's warm, just remember what it will be in like a month, and it'll be awesome again.
All you have to do is think about Free Press Summerfest, and you realize we got it good right now. All right. All right. So we are going to now go to San Antonio and do the Technology Bytes info shot. I'm sure there's all kinds of great news that Peter Hughes has prepared for us. So let's hear what he's got to say.
It's the Technology Bites Info Shot. Technology news and commentary by Peter Hughes. Injected directly into your skull.
So here's never a good sign. When the FCC tries to make something better, that often doesn't go the direction you might like. The FCC has announced those internet regulations that would allow online content providers to negotiate for preferential treatment from internet service providers, potentially undermining the principles of net neutrality. An FCC statement obtained by Mashable on Today leaves open the possibility that companies could pay internet service providers to get better access to consumers. You know, previously net neutrality regulations required that all internet traffic be treated equally, but that was struck down by a U.S. court, and now Congress won't do anything about it. In essence, the rule change might mean that Comcast or Verizon would be able to negotiate with somebody like, oh, Netflix or Skype or Amazon and charge them for faster content delivery to consumers. An FCC official told Mashable that the proposed rules would still fulfill the goals of the FCC's 2010 Open Internet Order, which forms the basis of net neutrality rules, but that a new standard would be created for, quote, assessing whether conduct threatens an open internet. So it's sort of the – if you've read Animal Farm, it's, you know, all animals are equal, but some are more equal than others. All networks are neutral, but some are more neutral than others or get better network than others. The standard would apparently replace the discrimination clause from the 2010 net neutrality rules, which forced service providers to treat all internet traffic as equal. It's unclear how the FCC would enforce the new standard. Net neutrality advocates claim that a system that allows for discrimination would put internet startups at a disadvantage, as ISPs would begin to favor established content providers that could afford to pay for better service. Corinne McSherry, intellectual property director for the Electronic Frontier Foundation, warned against rushing to judgment, but said that the proposal was an ominous sign for net neutrality advocates. Opponents of net neutrality regulation argue that ISPs should be free to control the content that subscribers access. Now, I'm going to stop for a second. Let's take that sentence apart and maybe rejigger it a little. Opponents of net neutrality regulation argue that ISPs should be free to control the content that subscribers access. I would rewrite that sentence to say argue that ISPs should be free to control the content that subscribers pay for the network and pay for access to that network at that ISP with the idea that they would get access to whatever content they would be accessing. You know, the idea is that, you know, the people who are against net neutrality basically think that since they own the pipes – that you should be forced to pay for them. And then if something gets popular because lots of people want it, then that's not enough that all those people who say have Netflix are paying their cable internet provider to get access to the internet, but that because you requested it and have that coming down through their pipes, that then the other side of the transaction should also pay them. I don't that somehow doesn't sound – it sounds like charging twice for the same thing. The FCC did say the draft rules would propose, quote, that broadband providers would be required to offer a baseline level of service to their subscribers along with the ability to enter into individual negotiations with content providers. Wow, baseline service like one byte per second maybe could be the minimum as opposed to zero. The draft was written by FCC Chairman Tom Wheeler and his staff. It will be circulated among his fellow commissioners tomorrow. They will vote on the proposal on May 15th. After a public comment period, the FCC will then write the final rules and vote on them. The FCC's official statement added that ISPs will, quote, need to act in a commercially reasonable manner subject to review on a case-by-case basis. In other words, that means we might check up on you, but – you know, this sounds like basically net neutrality turns into net screwtrality, but that's just my personal opinion. And in wearables have been a big deal for been talked about ever since the first kind of rumors of Apple doing a watch or some of that stuff started leaking out a couple years ago. Well, some of it's going the other way. Nike is apparently dismantling the hardware team behind its Fuel Band fitness tracker, according to a new report from CNET. The sportswear company, which features Tim Cook on its board of executives, reportedly fired 70 or 80% of the 70-person hardware team on Thursday. Apparently, word of the firings had been circulating on Secret, an anonymous social network for gossip centered around the tech industry. I had never heard of that, I guess, since it's called Secret, but it is available on the App Store. Their message was, quote, "The douchebag execs at Nike are going to lay off a bunch of the engineering team who developed the Fuel Band and other Nike Plus stuff, mostly because the execs committed gross negligence, wasted tons of money, and didn't know what they were doing," was according to one post, which had 127 likes and 89 shares. So you can guess that was fairly popular. This news follows the cancellation of another slimmer iteration of the Fuel Band, which Nike had planned to release this fall. But now they've shelved it, along with all other future physical product projects under the digital sport masthead. Nike instead said it will focus on its efforts on software that can be put into smartphones, which has grown more useful as sensors have improved in recent years. So this decision has interesting connotations with regards to Apple. On the one hand, part of the motivating factor in Nike getting out of the hardware business is reportedly the entry of Apple and Google, with Nike's belief that they can't compete with them on a tech circle, which I wondered when they went into it in the first place why they were doing that. But on the other hand, the failure of this doesn't speak well of consumer interest in wearables. Tim Cook, who has long connections with Nike, has stated previously in an interview for All Things D that research has indicated a lack of mass market among the 10 to 20-year-olds for anything worn on the wrist. They like naked wrists. So that could be a problem for wearables, obviously, unless you can find some other place to wear one than on your wrist. And I don't know where the kids are wearing them these days. They wear their baggy pants and their – oh, wait. No. Anyways, so who knows where they would wear a wearable. In other news, this one's interesting. Amazon, you know, they are living up to their name as far as being a giant in whatever they're doing. They're working on killing off the grocery store with a same-day delivery service and even a Dash gadget for restocking items around the house. Now they're going one step further to take on Costco and Walmart and Sam's type places with a new program called Prime Pantry. If you're a Prime member living in the 48 contiguous states, the lower 48, in other words, not Hawaii or Alaska, which I don't believe we broadcast to, so if you're hearing this show and you're not in Hawaii or Alaska or outside of the United States, then you're covered. You can ship 45 pounds worth of household essentials in everyday sizes, that's in quotes, as opposed to in bulk. So you can't buy, you know, 200 rolls of toilet paper like you can at Costco or Sam's for a flat fee, 45 pounds worth of household essentials for a flat fee of $6. And yeah, that's on top of your Prime membership payment. But, you know, Amazon said the items available include popular soft drinks and bottled water, a new range of paper and laundry products in popular sizes, single boxes of breakfast cereal, potato chips, convenience sized personal care products, and more. Rumors about an Amazon Pantry service began circling late last year, and while the service is live now, it has not been formally announced. To help you stay within the weight limit if you try to use this, if you're an Amazon Prime member and you want to try to use it, a virtual Amazon cardboard box will show you how much room is left. Well, you could easily fill a Prime Pantry box with obscene amounts of fruit by the foot and gummy bears. The program is especially attractive for customers who want to stock up on heavier and bulkier items that don't usually ship for free. So could be very interesting. I mean, it does $6 to have it delivered to your house. That's fairly cheap. You know, I could see where there could be a number of things where people would you know, of course, you would have already paid the Amazon Prime thing, but you get, you know, if you're already in it, then you're only paying the $6 more than you already were to get groceries delivered to your house. 45 pounds of groceries, I don't know how much that would turn out to be as far as in items. I don't know how much like a flat of bottled water weighs, but still, you know, well, let's see, if you bought three of those, so for $18 you could have 130 pounds of groceries delivered to your house. That your time is probably worth $18 for a lot of people. So this one will be interesting to watch and see what happens with it. See if people use it and see if this is kind of the new thing. It's interesting because before online shopping stuff was all very kind of hyper local, and now this is, of course, in a sense, is sort of big national because it's all of the 48 contiguous states. And finally, on new stuff, could be interesting to some of the geekier game players out amongst there. XCOM, Enemy Unknown, Firaxis Games' turn-based strategy game that pits a human resistance against alien invaders, is headed to Android soon, according to a recent tweet from the series' official Twitter account. The game will be available through Google Play and the Amazon App Store, according to the tweet. It arrived on iOS for iPad and iPhone last June, where it's available for like around $20. You can check out the launch trailer for the game's first mobile incarnation if you look online. It's also available on, you know, like Xbox, PlayStation, and that stuff. But now as you look forward very soon, you'll be able to get it on your Android device. So then you can play it on any number of these different devices. You can take your turns and I don't know, be the alien invaders or be the resistance. And that's the news. I'm Peter Hughes.
All right. Well, I got the XCOM, the new version of XCOM for the Xbox, and it is really good.
I know you've been a long-time XCOM fan. I have.
What's XCOM?
XCOM is a turn-based strategy game where you play the role of a Earth resistance against alien invaders.
Gotcha.
And you have to collect their tech, and you have to research it so that you can have more powerful tech to fight them. It's a great deal of fun. I like turn-based because I'm not so quick on the draw. Strategy and like mapping out your characters have so many moves they can move on the grid. They can see so much distance depending on their elevation.
A couple of studies have come out and they show that players peak. Then they just looked at male players, but male players peak in real time strategy games like StarCraft and what have you at 24. That's when you're at the top of your game as far as managing multiple things as quickly as you can. From there, it's just downhill.
They
didn't paint a pretty picture, which is why I don't play StarCraft anymore.
All right. 713-526-5738 if you want to be on the air with us here tonight on Technology Bites. We are accepting your calls. The phone lines are all wide open. Considering that we're going to start our fundraiser next week, this is your last opportunity for several weeks to have a normal old everyday show and get your computer questions answered, because we'll be spending the next 3 weeks convincing you to make pledges of financial support to KPFT because you love us.
Although this week you could take the opportunity, if you know you're going to pledge anyway, and go and do the like online thing ahead of time and make sure you note that you're pledging for Technology Bites, and hopefully we could knock some off of our totals before
That's
we can
true.
Start.
That's a very good point that Pete makes. If you go to kpft.org, there should be a tip jar on there, and I'm going to double check that to make sure I'm not talking crazy. If I can spell KPFT, kpft.org, there should be a tip jar on there where you can actually go. Yep, there's a tip jar, and you can go there and make a pledge. So I am anticipating that our goal for next week will probably be somewhere between $1,600 and $1,800, if not $2,000. So anything we can make towards that will just make it that much easier on the day of the show, the day of the fundraising show, to get on with things. Because our promise to you is that if we raise the funds that we need to raise during any given show, once we've made that number, we stop asking. So,
and if we make all 3 weeks first show, the next 2 weeks are back to regular.
Yeah. So if you're crazy and wealthy and just for the hell of it want to have us do a regular show,
yeah, if you want to
use a tip jar, drop in about $6,000. We'll figure it out after that.
If anybody pledges $6,000 to Technology Bites, they can come sit in on the show with us for several weeks. All right, so we got the phone lines are open, 713-526-5738. We're not asking you to call in and pledge. We're asking you to call in with your computer conversations. And that's about it for right now. So enjoy the enjoy the regular programming while it lasts, because this, I mean, it's not just us that does the fundraiser, it's every show here, so.
But I feel it here the most.
I do, myself. I mean, to heck with the other programs and their fundraising woes. But I'm very self-serving when it comes to that. But all right. So we do have a geek gathering coming up a week from Friday, as we mentioned before. Any other interesting technology? Anybody acquire anything? Have you gotten a new phone yet, Groovehouse? No, your contract's up when?
Next month. Next couple weeks. Yeah.
You got your eyes on a new phone?
I do.
Which one are you thinking about? The Nexus 5?
Nexus 5.
There's another interesting phone that was...
I'm going to give Samsung a break for a while.
Are you? I don't blame you.
But I'm not switching to Apple yet.
No, I don't blame you.
Yet? Don't say yet. That implies you might.
But I'm not switching to Apple. Eventually. Yeah.
He has not felt compelled to do that just yet. But he's not shutting the door completely.
The power of Jobs compels you. The power of Jobs.
What about this OnePlus One phone that I'm reading about?
I haven't seen it.
It's
is that like the HTC?
It's one? $200
competition to the Nexus.
It's the OnePlus Nexus killer. They're calling it.
I'm not doing anything with HTC either.
Nothing really.
Yeah.
Why not?
This loaner phone was HTC.
Yeah, but it's a very cheap, low down.
But if they still have all the HTC heavy layering, all the stuff that HTC has to do before the phone runs type of OS, then it's still going to be bulky. And
what about that Firefox phone?
I pretty get it. If you can find a really nice, expensive Firefox handset, get it, but actually don't. It's not quite ready yet. It's still very... They say it's beta. It's not beta yet.
It's not even beta?
It's not quite beta. I liked HTC, but I carried like the top end HTC gear, like the flagship. I think it was like the first Nexus might have been HTC.
Right.
And I dug it, but they're a good enough company to where if they set out to make a really bad phone, they'll make a bad phone, and you might have gotten one of those.
Yeah, really.
It's intentionally just horrible. Yeah. Sorry.
It's been a struggle.
Struggle. It is a
smartphone struggle.
It is a Max Planck's birthday.
Is there such a thing?
What?
Is there such a thing as a smartphone struggle?
Also known as first world problems.
Yes, exactly.
I have so many choices. I don't know what to do. Opportunities abound. I'm just beside myself. Woe is me.
Woe is me.
Wow, the OnePlus, or the new, I guess, OnePlus? Yeah, OnePlus One. That's a funky name.
It's
pretty
cheap.
It's the
OnePlus, right?
Yeah. It's less than your
other
options. It's
$200.
Yeah.
It's 11 plus.
It's one comma one plus. I think that's what they call
it. One plus together space one. At least on that's what PC news says. Who knows?
It's ultra thin. Looks like
11 plus one.
No,
it's the two.
O-N-E.
It's called the two.
They were considering
first Friday.
They were considering calling it Gemini's twin or one plus one minus one. But
I'm gonna wait for one plus one version two. I think we'll get it right the next time.
Would that be the 1 plus 2?
1 plus 1 v2.
And would you call it the 3 for short? Or?
Yeah, get the Nexus 5.
1 plus 1 on a curved surface?
We can draw that out.
The third version is going to be the Pi. The 1 plus Pi.
The 1 plus 1, 2.
And they're going to do it to as many digits as it takes.
All right, 713-526-5738 if you want to be on the air with us tonight. 713-526-KPFT. Groovehouse is standing by. Is the phone ringing? I didn't even see it light up in here. That's very strange.
And they're gone.
Or was he just like, pretending to take a phone call?
Just making sure
they
work.
I think he was practicing.
Oh, he was just checking to see if the phones were working, because obviously the fact that no calls are coming in has to be a result.
Hello?
Maybe it's a zombie attack.
Aren't the Rockets
The Rockets
playing
are playing, tonight? But that's not for a little while, is it?
I don't know.
They lost the first game because of a bad call. Poor Rockets.
Poor.
Well, at least they're moving that to earlier in the season now instead of waiting to the very end.
713-526-KPFT to be on the air with Technology Bites.
Flicted
Maybe
is
they're
one...
all in line for Godzilla.
Flicted is one of a billion now.
One of a billion.
Yeah, what app is well on its way to a billion users, and Flicked just helped them one step closer to that goal.
Which one?
WhatsApp? Or did you not install that?
No,
is that the one you didn't
I did.
Install?
Yeah, I went on a social app binge a couple of weeks ago. I already had Snapchat installed because I just wanted to see how it worked a few months ago. But yeah, I went and installed Kick, Line, WeChat, Telegram, Wicker, WhatsApp, Facebook Messenger, and Secret.
How many friends do you have now?
I think I have 5 or 6, but they're spread across all those.
I said earlier, Flicted. Flicted now has the phone of a 14-year-old girl.
Yeah, what is up with that?
I just wanted to see how they worked and what they did.
What's your favorite right now?
I think he did. I think he was pie buying. He was high on pie, and started adding social stuff. He was just feeling so social, sitting there at House of Pies. Filling up.
My pie picture will go everywhere.
I think
I'm going to download another one while I have another piece of pie.
I kind of didn't want to install WhatsApp just because Facebook bought them, but then I did.
And your friend on Facebook Messenger suggested it.
To me, of the ones I installed, Secret seems the most interesting, although it's not very interesting when you don't have any friends that are posting anything to it. So I'm just seeing secrets from random people that I don't know across the U.S. mostly, and they're not really that interesting of secrets or anything. So, but it's an interesting concept, and Wicker's pretty cool too. It seems to be pretty cool.
My bad. Yeah, WhatsApp is not close to a billion. They are at over 500 million, but they're up from like 30 million when Facebook bought them. So they're pushing a billion is the idea here.
Wow.
All right. 713-526-5738. So how many social apps have you installed, Afflicted? That many.
He's regressing
nine.
Further.
He's
yeah.
installed nine.
Has Groovehouse, have you just installed one, or was that another gesture? It's also a social kind of media thing, I guess. But Johnny Cash, number one.
All right, I see Groovehouse has got a call screened. We've got all the other lines are open. 713-526-5738. If you want to be on the air with us, we're going to take this call. But we have got lots of open lines at 713-526-KPFT. Groovehouse?
Groovehouse yes. Asked, but I hadn't looked for it, but Groovehouse was wondering why I didn't install Ketchup app.
Do you have any more invites left, Jay?
We were wondering if you knew. We were wondering if you knew if it was still around. He's still trying to get rid of those
invites. No, but I'm afraid that if you never mind, I'm not gonna even
the social media apps will never die.
You're just lucky I was considerate enough to invite you by randomly installing your piece of software. You know, like elephants, these guys' memory.
Only the bad things.
It's okay. If there's one thing I'm most proud of, it's my humility. Groovehouse, who do we have?
Up first on the show.
Shut up! Go ahead.
Okay. Up first on the show, we're going to speak with
Slower,
Tyra.
Tyra, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hello, good evening. I'm in the market to upgrade like several different technology pieces, phone, tablet, and a notebook, maybe a couple of notebooks, laptops. The first thing with the phone, I've had a Droid, and it has the keyboard on it, and I've just loved the keyboard. I know I sound like a dinosaur liking the keyboard so much, but my company gave me an iPhone, and I hate the iPhone. It's so sensitive that if I make a wrong keystroke, it'll do some bizarre thing, like download my contact list into the middle of an email or something stupid. So I'm looking for, and I write a lot, you know, a lot of emails and a lot of Word documents. It seems like none of the phones or phablets or tablets have much in the way of a Word-based, you know.
Well, first of all, I mean, I don't think that's really what the phone's designed for. for, you know, creating those kind of documents and stuff. But if you're interested in using a tablet type of device to do that, there are applications that are available. I mean, I guess you could get Pages for the iPhone if you wanted to try to do it on an
Google
iPhone.
Docs for Android.
And Google Docs for Android phones. But it seems to me that's, you know, if you're sitting down to write a document, you don't want to do that on a phone.
Phones are better for just barely being able to see any of a document. It's tough to read it, much less, you know, compose it.
Right.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and I don't mean, you know, writing a whole document on a phone. For the phone, it really is retrieving them, but it's just writing emails. I have, like I said, with the iPhone, it does just bizarre things, and I'm sure, you know, I'm pretty klutzy with it.
But. Well, you might consider going with an Android device that has something like Swipe on it.
I was going to say, I've picked up iPhones from time to time, and I've got the same issue with the keyboard, and it looks like, you know, half of the whole iPhone methodology of, like, getting words onto the phone is that it does a whole lot of error corrections. When you start to type, chances are most people don't get the right words, but it guesses and it gets it close enough. I use a Nexus 5 and usually a little bit more real estate, and having a choice of keyboards makes typing a lot easier for me.
Does it have a physical keyboard?
No, it doesn't have a physical keyboard, but you can use, like, the Swipe keyboard, like Jay said, which is one where you don't really lift your thumbs. You just kind of move your fingers around, or you can swap out to bigger keys or different keys. You're not stuck with just the keys that come on the iPhone. And I was one of the same people that bought phones for a long time. I wouldn't get a phone that didn't have a physical keyboard, but there aren't that many options out right now. If you go with a physical keyboard, a lot of times you're getting something that's quite a bit slower. So it's as tough as it is, it might be time to kind of move away from that. But if you do know that Android does have some better offerings, if you go with, like, a upscale, you know, flagship kind of Android phone.
And it's amazing how quick you can actually adapt to it. Mm-hmm. I mean, the first time you pick up a touch keyboard like an iPhone or anything else, it can be kind of awkward but you could learn quickly how to, you know, get your fingers in the right spaces. And what I like about the iPhone, particularly on that keyboard, I like the way the keys balloon up so you can see, you know, you can quickly at a glance see if you're in the right space.
But that, to me, the key shouldn't be that small to begin with. And I guess that's my fundamental issue with it, is I'm one of the old schoolers. I think they should be big. But I guess, you know, maybe a day or two on it, I'd be a good typist at it. I just seem to really be horrible anytime I pick one up.
Well, I think a lot with the way you're interacting with social media and being able to see what you're replying to, in that amount of real estate, you have to.
That's one thing in the Android. You actually have to remember what you're applying to, because it takes up most of the screen.
If you got a big fat keyboard and you know it, and you can remember what the message said, then that's fine. But
yeah, that's it too. Is that I'm scrolling a lot of times? I'm like scrolling back and forth. I'm trying to, you know, read a message that somebody has sent me, or to read what I've written, and it's all over the board. It's like pulls down another screen.
Well, you could consider just getting a phone to be a phone and get a tablet for doing the other kind of stuff. I mean, you can get iPads, and you can get
a 7-inch or with an iPad mini, so you go in a purse and you could carry everywhere with
you. And you can get a physical keyboard that's Bluetooth to it. So you get a case that has a physical keyboard in it. So you have that portable device that you can then actually easily type on. And you could have a phone that, you know, you could fudge through if you need to quickly read an email or something, or if you actually want to use it for, God forbid, making a phone call. But then you could have a tablet. You know, it's not that much overall weight consideration. I carry a phone and a MacBook Air, so I have it all sorted out, right, in that regard. It's super lightweight. Easy to travel with. I can do the stuff on the fly with my phone. I can tether the laptop to my phone so it has internet access. But an iPad or an iPad Air or a Windows tablet, Nexus 7 tablet, any of those would allow you to use a physical keyboard on them.
Or there's also, and I'm sure it's for Android too, I just looked it up for iPhone because you mentioned iPhone. There are keyboard cases for the iPhone that basically put a keyboard behind it that you can slide out, and it's kind of like a...
Like an old Android flip out,
like the old
keyboard?
BlackBerry kind of thing, or the Sidekick or whatever.
Yeah.
Where it slides out from behind the phone and has a full kind of QWERTY keyboard.
I'm sure they make keyboard cases for other phones as well.
They're like $30 or $40, it looks like. So that might be a way to turn what you've already got into something that you can. That you can use.
Oh, that looks pretty slick.
The tablet thing, I must admit, I've seriously thought about, you know, am I better off with this, you know, like an LTE 7-inch tablet and either stay with an older phone, an older smartphone, or have a more basic phone, just because of the better use from the larger screen.
The iPhone keyboard buddy case looks really cool, actually. It looks like the iPhone snaps into like just a normal kind of backing case, and then it's got another keyboard that slides down, and it reminds me of like the old Nokia kind of keys with like the blue lettering, you know, the alt keys and the main keys, and they actually light up. They're backlit. It looks pretty slick.
Oh, that's nifty. Yeah. I travel for work, and so I'll have to write a message in a different language. And iPhone, I haven't figured out, it doesn't like writing in a different language because it wants to, you know, think your word is one thing when it's another thing. Challenge.
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of challenges with mobility
really?
And stuff. It's just
with the iPhone?
You could turn the autocorrect off if you know how to spell the word in the language.
Well, I was gonna say,
can you load different dictionaries, I wonder? On iPhone, you can on Android.
Mine appeared to autocorrect my Russian pretty well.
Really?
Yeah.
Did you have to load up like a Russian font?
No, I just flip to the Russian keyboard and start typing Russian, and a lot of times it'll know what word I'm
saying.
So
there
are
other keyboards. You could change the language. You go into settings and change the language.
No, you just change the keyboards.
Right.
You just go to keyboards and you can choose different keyboards. And then once you do that, there's
how many languages are represented? I haven't
a lot. I don't know how many, but yeah, you just go into the keyboards and you can pick which keyboard you want. So I pick a Russian keyboard and it's got all the Russian characters. It's the layout of a Russian keyboard, and then I can type in Russian.
All right. So there's settings, general, maybe.
Huh. And then just hunt for keyboards.
Keyboards. For example, mine has. I'm looking at the. If you go into general, then international, and then keyboards. Add new keyboard. They've got English, Arabic, Bulgarian, Catalan, Cherokee, Chinese, a bunch of different Chinese, Croatian, Czech, Danish. So you just add the keyboard and then switch keyboards if you're typing in a different language.
And then, yeah, once you do that, you can actually hit that little globe symbol that's at the bottom left of the keyboard.
And it will allow you to pick different keyboards?
It'll
quick
split.
Spot.
Hey, that's kind of cool.
It's amazing. Yeah. Learning new things here. This is fun.
That's one area that Apple, for a long time, was way ahead of specifically Windows. But even Linux and stuff in general, like Apple was way ahead as far as the ability to properly display character sets from other languages and be able to flip to writing in
Just cool. I just added the Spanish keyboard to mine and hit the globe. It switches over to Spanish. I get the Enya.
Yeah. I've been doing that with Russian keyboard for the last 3 years.
Space bar is now called Espacio.
Wow.
Yeah, that's kind of cool. So, yeah, that's very cool. I'm going to show that to my wife because she does a lot of stuff in Spanish. And, yep, I learned something new. Thanks, Flicked.
Anytime.
We got to have a free ketchup invite for that.
So all right. Are you thinking about, like, settling all on one ecosystem, like going all Android or all Apple? Are you cool with a mix, or do you have a strategy on that?
I'm thinking more of a mix for different reasons.
Well, I do like this. I like having one ecosystem. That way, if you buy an app, if you buy a phone app, it should be available to your tablet. If you, there's a lot of harmony in having all one platform.
Yeah, that's true.
But that's just me personally. I mean, I just like having all that. You know, just because as it is, when I go from using my iPad to my laptop, I'm still trying to swipe the screen. You know, I get used to how one type of OS does its business. So if you had an Android phone and a Windows tablet, for example, it seems to me like that would just add a layer of complexity. Unless you just like that. I mean, some people
I like having the same phone and tablet because those, you know, all share from the kind of the same app store.
Yeah, I mean, I don't
say
necessarily have it. My laptop could be Windows or whatever, but my phone and my tablet, I think, should be the same.
Although there's probably something nice to be said about having like an OS X laptop and then having an iPhone, because I bet they sync a little bit better. They get first attention. I'm sure that Apple wants that to work first before they look at Windows and they look at Linux. And they don't actually look at Linux. They look the other way.
I have a friend who just recently got the Nokia Lumina because she wanted the camera. And she was an iPhone and an iPad user before, and it's driven her nuts that I guess that's the Windows-based system, but there are no apps out. She said the apps are all for Apple or for Android.
Yes.
Yeah, not for her. So she's thinking of giving the phone back just for that. She likes the phone, but she hates not having apps.
All right, well, I hope that helps you out some. Appreciate your call tonight.
Thanks so much.
All right, have a good night.
You too.
All right. Grew House.
Yes.
I see some more people have called in. Isn't that exciting?
Yes, they have.
All right. 713-526-5738. We've got two calls in the queue. We're coming up on the top of the first hour, so I imagine we could probably take these two calls. But if you want to get in the queue for being in the second hour of the show, go ahead and call in and get yourself put on hold. Grew House?
Yes.
Who's up next?
Up next, we're going to speak with Lily.
Lily, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hi, how are you guys?
Good, how are you?
Good, I'm good. I had a quick question. So I have a teenager and a cheating spouse. So I'm trying to find something for Apple phones where I can see what my teenager is doing and, two, what my husband is looking at before he erases it.
So you want to be able to monitor what the phone is being, what's being done with the phone in terms of sites that are being accessed.
Yes.
And messages.
Have you ever heard the saying, don't ask scary questions? Someone has. There we go.
I don't know how to do it. So I just,
there are apps that you can load onto iPhones and iPads and such that will monitor the activity. There's like NetNanny is the big one that I know of. They make apps for the iPhone, the iPod Touch, the iPad, and so forth that will tell you what websites the person who's using it is going to. And the problem is that kids are very good about being able to get rid of this or circumvent this kind of stuff. But check out NetNanny.
Okay. So when those are added onto the phone, can they see that they're on there?
I haven't played with them in a while. I think they're designed to run fairly surreptitiously, but I may be wrong. That may be a situation. You know, in my mind, I mean, the whole husband thing is a whole other question, but your kid, I like the idea of saying, you know what? You're young. I'm willing to let you have a phone, but you need to know that what you're using it for and what's being done with it's going to be out in the open. So don't try to like trick them into doing something bad and then catching them at it. Let them know that it's not acceptable to do something questionable and that you are paying attention. That's like the whole idea of having like the family computer out of the bedroom and in the main living area so that people, you know, will use it properly and know that they're subject to scrutiny. But if you go and look at netnanny.com, you can read all about their product. But if you do a Google search on parental supervision software and that kind of thing, there's tons of offerings out there.
You can also consider the cell provider that you're using because I know some of the bigger cell providers provide some level of access and control over if you deem it as a child's phone, that they give you more access into like the audit logs and stuff. But I'm pretty sure that there are some cell providers out there that are specifically designed for parents to have kids' phones where all of their text messages are actually logged onto the provider system where the parent can log into the website and look at the text messages. I've never looked at it, but I'm almost positive I've heard people talk about that before.
Does that go for websites they visited as well?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. As far as I know, the better softwares out there should keep a log of what websites they're visiting, who they're sending messages to, possibly even what those messages are. They could probably also tell you using the GPS location where the device is at any given time.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Ooh, okay. There's something called iRecovery for iPhone. And it looks pretty innocuous. It could just be like, hey, I lost my iPhone. But you can actually recover all the deleted pictures, texts, and other data from the iPhone.
And what is that called?
It's called iRecovery, like letter I and then recovery.
Huh, okay. Well, you guys have been really helpful. Thank you.
The other thing, if it's an iPhone, if you turn on...
Find my iPhone.
Find friends.
Oh.
you can track people that way. And also, yeah, if you turn on the Find My iPhone, then you can go to the iCloud site and ask where the iPhone is, and it will tell you usually within, you know, 20 meters where it is at that point in time.
If that doesn't work, call us back next week, and we'll talk subdermal tracking chips.
Well, thank you, guys. You guys have helped me a lot.
All right. Well, good luck.
Thank you.
Thank you. I'm a little distressed about the whole monitoring her husband thing because, like Barrett said, you know, don't ask questions you don't want to know the answer to. I'm sure.
Just telling, I mean, I don't know. That's a toughie. Well, I don't want to blow up a marriage or anything like that. I would say if you're going to do it, treat it like the same way you would treat your kids and say, hey, I'm putting this on here. Just
well,
but that could also open
up
its own whole
if
thing.
If you
so.
Put software on your spouse's equipment, designed to track them or monitor them surreptitiously, and they find out that you've done that.
Will it hold up in court?
I don't even know. I don't
no, it's just it's
stuff.
A fairly it, big betrayal of trust.
It is
I
a betrayal
say,
of trust. You
know,
I mean, if you are, I mean, that's like it's like once you've stooped to hiring a private investigator to follow someone around, you know, if they find out you've done that, they're going to learn that you don't trust them.
A LoJack tracker also works.
Yeah.
I was about to say, yeah, just, you know.
GPS mounted under the car that's, you know, hard to find.
I think something implanted in the human body is the way to go because, you know, unless they hit a metal detector, they're not going to know.
Well.
It's the new I don't trust you wearable from Apple.
There's probably a whole market for that.
Ooh, there probably is.
Well, I mean, if you're to the point, too, maybe where you do have suspicions and maybe you are in the gathering evidence mode, I mean, I can see maybe a cause
now,
for that then.
You know, I can see a case for it
if
you're
the trust
like,
has already been broken.
Right. Then. But if you're just operating under, like, now I know that I can possibly monitor someone's online behavior, why don't I just do that to see? That's like eavesdropping. That's a betrayal of confidence and trust. But if you're already in a situation where, you know, he's stepped out on you a number of times and he's told you he'd never do it again and you want to find out if he's telling you the truth. I mean, if you've already been betrayed, of course, then you might want to wonder why.
Although if you've already been betrayed, then it should already be out in the open. And if the person's really serious about the fact that they're not going to do it and they're changed, then they honestly shouldn't have as much of a problem.
Yeah, with it being on
allowing
there.
It to be on there.
Right. Rebuilding trust requires you right. to put this app on your phone.
And that way they know to go buy a burner phone and use it instead.
Yeah, the husband should be calling in the next 5 minutes. Next top out of the show, we'll talk about how to circumvent all the advice we just gave out.
How much are burner phones? Where can they be acquired? And are they really not traceable to you? So.
Public libraries, 101.
All right. Well, let's take this last call here before we go on our break. But if you want to be on the air during the second half of the show, 713-526-5738. Second half of the show, the husband responds. Greenhouse, who do we have?
Up next, we're going to speak with Rob.
Rob, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hey, how are you doing, Jay Lee?
Good, how are you?
I'm pretty good. I can barely hear you. I'm on a...
on a burner phone?
Yeah, I'm fine. I can hear you.
All right.
I have a, first of all, let me give you a little tidbit. I'm 52. I am pretty much computer illiterate. I know you hate these calls.
If we hated these calls, we would have stopped doing the show.
My sister bought me a tablet last Christmas, and I'm trying to learn a little bit about it. I was wondering, is there anywhere... like maybe a college, you know, where I could go and learn, you know, how to operate it better, you know. Sure, I mean, I'm Google, you know.
How have you ever heard of HAL PC? I'm looking to see what
no,
your schedule is. It's around. It's on the west side of the 610 Loop, like around 610 and San Felipe, that area. And it's Houston Area League of PC Users, and they do a lot of classes and stuff like that. I know at one point they had like a handhelds kind of remedial class. I don't know if they still do. I'm headed out to the site now.
Okay. That's okay.
All right, what are we looking for?
HAL PC to see if they have any training classes.
HAL PC.
HAL-PC.org.
I just wrote that down.
Yeah, you can go visit their website. They offer training. You can also look for there's a leisure learning here in town, offers a number of different classes. I'm 52. I'm just like you, but I'm sure you can at least get on your computer and get on the web.
Yeah, well, I'm a carpenter. I mean, you've been doing what you do, Jay Lee, for a long time.
Well, you mentioned 50.
Oh, by the way, I mainly listen to y'all. I've been listening to y'all for about 2 years, and mainly for the comedy.
Right. I'm just saying is that I know people that are 80 years old that can at least use a web browser and send email. So
may call their web browser the internet.
Yeah. But I have confidence that you can get online and go to – you can check out hal-pc.org. And if you Google search leisure learning, you'll find their website. And you can dig around and see what courses they offer.
Doesn't HalPC down Clear Lake, the Clear Lake division, don't they have like a – classes geared towards elderly users too, or didn't they?
I think HalPC is mostly all.
Is it all elderly?
I'm sorry, say that again.
I live in Conroe. I'm more towards Huntsville. You know,
well, I don't know where all HalPC offers their class, their what they call their SIGs or their training, but there's an
HCC campus up in the Woodlands somewhere, right?
Yeah.
They may have something.
Lone Star College on.
Oh yeah, Lone Star College.
Lone Star. Yeah, I got a Lone Star unit right around the corner from me. Yes, sir.
Because they have like leisure learning type classes. I used to, I don't know, back in the 90s, I used to teach internet classes, like how to use a web browser to people and on weekends. Yeah.
I mean, when I play on the tablet, you know. Suddenly it'll say downloading, and I'm like, no, you know, I'm not downloading nothing.
I don't know what kind of budget you have, but I had a couple of friends. Oh, that was odd. I had a couple of friends in college that they would make a little money on the side by going around and teaching people how to use Excel or how to use computers or just how to do really basic stuff. You know, you may look on a few sites, just kind of put the word out there and see if anyone would want to come maybe spend a couple of hours one-on-one for, you know, not too much money.
That's
or if you've got any cousins, a case of beer, or, you know, something, you know, some cookies, who knows. But, you know, reach around and see if there's anyone that can actually sit next to you and actually show you how to do some of this stuff. I bet you'd pick it up a lot faster than you think.
Well, I appreciate it, man.
All right, well, good luck. And it looks like HalPC might have something up near Conroe, at least in spring. But give them a look, and good luck to you. All right, well, we are here in the final throws. We had 45 seconds. Is that right? Is my clock right? Yay. All right. My clock's right. Okay. Well, we got to take a short break and take care of some station business. These have been some great phone calls so far. All of our lines are open now. If you want to call in and get in the queue for being on the air with us for the second half of the show, 713-526-5738 is the number to call. You are listening to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
And he's
Groovehouse.
We'll be back after these brief messages.
Desde 1970, KPFT ha sido manejada por personas que dan su tiempo libre para contestar teléfonos, barrer pisos, manejar la mesa de controles de sonidos y mucho más. A diferencia de las estaciones comerciales, es la pasión y no son los dólares por comerciales el combustible que hace trabajar la radio que usted escucha. ¿Cuenta usted con algunos minutos para darnos una mano? ¿Tiene usted experiencia en algún campo en particular? Considere donar su tiempo libre como voluntario para KPFT y especialmente para sus programas en español. Visite la página de internet www.kpft.org para aprender más acerca de cómo convertirse en un voluntario en KPFT y para bajar la solicitud de voluntario que indique su interés. Si usted cuenta con un bajo presupuesto económico y no puede aportar una donación en este momento, el ser voluntario por pocas horas al mes lo puede calificar como miembro de la estación. Esta es libre de comerciales, patrocinada por Radio Escuchas, Radio Pacífica, KPFT, Houston.
Imagine hearing KPFT even when a thunderstorm has knocked out power to our transmitter. Imagine listening to your favorite KPFT programs when you're out of town. You can. You can listen online with your computer. Go to kpft.org, then click on one of the Listen Live links at the very top of our homepage. We have medium and high fidelity links there for both our regular analog channel and our HD2 channel. See the links at the top of kpft.org. There's more. Imagine being able to hear any KPFT program at any time that fits your schedule. Go to archive.kpft.org and listen or download any show from the last 2 weeks. For information on subscribing to your favorite show, to download it automatically to your computer, click on the podcast help link at archive.kpft.org. This is KPFT Houston.
All right, and we're back. And I see people have dialed in for some more Technology Bites phone call stuff. All right. So welcome back to the second. Welcome to the second half of Technology Bites.
Did I miss bear time? What happened?
There was work.
It was
work
extremely short.
Time, okay. Very short. However, Nerd Night Houston is coming up. I think it's tomorrow night, April 24th, and that's going to be downtown. I think doors open 7:30. The actual event starts at 8, and they're going to be talking about. Oh, it's planetary formation. Not how I read that the first time. Still, it should be interesting.
not like California, yeah, no. Right?
Mummification and rocket launches. So they're on Twitter at, I think they're just at Nerd Night Houston, but it's N-I-T-E, Nerd
Night
Houston.
It starts at 8.
Not starts at 8. They say doors open at 7:30. Show starts at
maybe
8.
Maybe I can. I've been to all the previous ones, I think.
And it's downtown at Natsuo, and that's 314 Main. So it's right there, I think, like one block north of
you
Texas,
got a longer
right
way
there.
To drive when once you get home now, don't you?
Yeah, but I would just stay up here from after work.
I'm going to try and swing by. I've yet to make one.
I think I already have plans. I already made plans to go to...
House of Pies?
No.
House of Pies. House of Pubs.
Where?
Hey, Merchant.
We can talk about places on yeah. air, right? So there's a place called, I just heard about it. I haven't been yet, but I got a text from a friend. And he said, like, holy H-word, I'm home. And he was at a place called Neil's Bar. So it's spelled like Bohr, B-O-H-R, like Niels Bohr, but it's Niels, B-A-H-R. I think that the sign is like it's like a nucleus with electrons going around, but the nucleus is a olive, which looks kind of cool. So it's like that, and you go inside. Supposedly there are comic books, couches. They make it cool to read books or plug in a laptop. So it's supposed to be kind of a geek/nerd bar, although I've heard that it's so laid back that a lot of older soccer fans have started going there to watch who's the Houston team?
The Dynamo.
Sorry. The Dynamo games, because it's not as loud as like Lucky's.
Is the Dynamo, but yes. The women's professional team is the Dash.
I don't know who goes there, but apparently that's the one time it gets a little non-nerdy is when some older patrons go to catch the game.
Soccer's still sort of nerdy.
It can be nerdy. It's not football or baseball.
Not,
so if you're
not
be sports,
outside of the U.S., but in the U.S. it's kind of, because it's kind of an alternative sport.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, it still is. So, you know. Unless you're a South American nerd, it's totally still non-mainstream.
All right.
No!
So where is this place?
It's on Walker.
Yeah, East Side. I think it's just a little east of downtown, maybe.
I just saw that it was on Walker. You
east
can find
of,
it.
Is it
one,
near,
it's
is
on
it,
Walker, one block east of 59.
Is it near TXRX?
It's on that side of town, but TXRX is a little bit... TXRX is north of Harrisburg on the weird side of the train tracks. This is easy. This is right
that,
on the other
that
side
near
of
Moon
George
Tower
R. Brown.
Inn?
In that direction, yeah.
Okay.
This is literally...
There's only a few things I know in East Downtown.
If you can find the great big white George R. Brown building...
Yep.
On the other side of it, on the opposite downtown
Dynamo
side of
Stadium.
It... Then that, right in that little
BBVA
area...
BBVA Compass Stadium.
Yeah, right, yeah. In that area is where it is, Neil's Bar.
Near Eighth Wonder?
No, it's near a really good Korean restaurant.
That one I don't know.
Yeah, I forget what it's called. I can never pronounce it, but it's really... I'm not going to tell anyone where it is either, because it's really good. It's usually not crowded.
It's not good.
And it's BYOB. It's pretty good. They do some amazing stuff over there.
All right. 713-526-5738. We lost one of our calls during our banter.
Oh, sorry.
Call back in if you want to be on the air. We apologize
for... They hate East Downtown.
They probably ran off to the bar. So. Woohoo! Nerd bars! Heck with these guys! All right, Groovehouse.
Yes.
Who do we have up?
Up next on the second half of the show, we're going to start it off with Rafi.
Rafi, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hi, guys.
Hi.
Yeah, I'm just calling because I've got this Android phone, and I guess nothing. It never really worked quite right. But the point is not this phone itself, but more like Android smartphones in general. It was kind of a rude awakening to realize that you can't just update any version of Android to the latest one.
Unless
you do like a Cyanogen mod or whatever. So my question is, does that leave you at risk for a security breach? I realize this heart bleed thing only applies to one very particular Android version, but in general, would you security-wise benefit from having a higher version of Android?
I'd say generally yes and no. The issue is, well, yeah, I know it's tough. The issue is the earlier versions of Android, they weren't around long enough to be a very large attack surface for people that were writing malware for phones. So generally what people are writing for, they're writing for the newest packages of things. So in that respect, having the newest version of Android or the one back is going to be the biggest kind of target for them to hit. But on the other hand, you've also got the most current patches. You've got the most current everything else. So you kind of got to ask yourselves, would you rather be kind of behind the lines, unprotected, and hopefully, you know, nothing will come over and hit you? Or would you rather be up on the front line but have some good protection, you know, just knowing that you're a target?
Oh, very interesting.
Yeah, I would. I'm kind of disappointed with Android in that regard because, and that's the nature of the open source by, you know, having these different versions that run on different hardware platforms, have different versions of the OS, have different needs in terms of hardware specs. You can buy a cheap Android phone, has, you know, might be five generations out of date now. They've got these just, they're really
lagging. Still see new phones with like 2.3 on there, you know, with like, you know, versions of Android that was out, came out 4 years ago, and they're on new phones. So,
yeah, it's one of the things that steers me away from Androids altogether. But you can buy, I mean, you don't even have to buy them. There are a lot of free ones. You can buy security packages to install on the phone, any virus, any malware software that should help protect you, and then just use common sense like you would with any other kind of computing device.
Are you more worried about like malicious apps that you may install, or are you more worried about like emails that may come in or clicking on web content, or like what part of the security?
I have ESET on my phone. I'm personally not particularly worried about any sort of attack. I was just thinking more in general because this end of support for Windows XP got me thinking. Is I mean, I'm not a computer guy particularly, but it seems like in general, if you stop providing patches, security vulnerabilities are going to be found and just exploited kind of mercilessly.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully, though, even though the OS isn't providing patches, hopefully all your applications are still being updated a little bit.
Yeah, because the vector is more the applications. In the smartphone world, the vector for attack is through the application more than it is through the OS. So it's more likely that you're gonna go download an app or something's going to make it in that's going to provide, you know, much more exploitable phone than if you hadn't installed the app in the first place.
Yeah, that's the biggest thing. Just stay away from apps like, you know, like cheap soundboards or any kind of app that it looks like someone threw together really quickly and has only been out there for a long time and you don't recognize the publisher. I generally won't install those because those are the ones that try to fly under the radar and usually sneak something else in along with the program.
Right. Well, thanks, guys. Very edifying.
All right. Thanks for your call. All right. 713-526-5738. If you want to be on the air with us tonight, 713-526-KPFT. We got one call in the queue. All the rest of the lines are open. If you are trying to get on the air and we're kind of feeling like we are taking too long, we're going to move through some phone calls now. It's your opportunity. 713-526-KPFT. If you want to be on the air, Groove House.
Yes.
Who do we have?
Up next, we're going to speak with Tom.
Tom, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
No problem.
I'm 50.
Okay.
And I need to know how to wipe clean a hard drive on a laptop so I can sell it at a garage sale.
Okay.
I want to get rid of all of my personal data.
Right.
And I don't want to take out the hard drive. I can as a last resort.
You don't have to. That's not necessary. Do you have a CD burner player on the laptop?
Yes.
All right. There's two things. There's two options you have. Is it, first of all, which brand is it? Is it Dell or HP or what?
It's a Dell.
Okay. Dell has a recovery partition, I believe, on there, which would allow you to boot up to the recovery mode and basically reinstall the software as it was when you bought the computer brand new. And that would overwrite all of your data. And you'd have to do a little searching around. I don't remember how to do it on the Dells specifically. There's usually like some kind of, you know, press one of the F keys or something. But if you don't care about that, if you don't want, I mean, it makes it more sellable if it has the software on there that, you know, makes the computer usable. The other option is that there's a program called Darin's Bootin'Nuke, D-A-R-I-N, Bootin'Nuke. And it, what it does is you download the software and then it you burn it to a CD.
Yeah.
You can then boot the computer from the CD and it will walk you through wiping all of the data off the hard drive completely.
Well, I'm familiar with that software program, but there are no clear instructions on how to begin that process, how to burn that software to the CD.
Well, it comes and go. Let me look.
Yeah, you need something that burns that you can make an ISO with.
I don't think that's necessarily true. I think the Darin's Bootin'Nuke has an executable package that will that will probably write it to the they've on the Darin's Bootin' on the dban.org they have a number of different help pages and stuff. But let me just check and see something here. Beta. These things are these files. Burn these files to a blank. Have you ever burned a CD before?
Yes.
All right. It looks like if you download the version, they have a version that says just burn these files to a blank disk and then boot the computer. Were they ever booted from a CD before?
Yes, I have.
All right. It looks like if you download the files that they're offering for download and then you just use that to burn it to a CD, let me see what it comes down as, if it's an ISO or whatever it looks like. But if it's an ISO, you just use your favorite burning software. Yeah, it's an ISO. An ISO is a disk image. So usually if you take that disk image and you just double click it, it will take you through the process of writing out the disk. Is it Windows 7 or Windows XP or what is the laptop?
Oh, it's XP and I know I need to get rid of it.
They even have a tutorial on the DBAN site that takes you step-by-step how to download a free burner and then actually burn the ISO out, just in case you don't have anything on the system. But usually you should have some.
XP should have the ability.
Beginning.
I'm sorry?
And these instructions start from the very, very beginning because I've tried Nuke and Boot before, and the instructions from the website aren't clear and concise where a layman can follow.
What model Dell is it?
It's an Experian 4300. I'm sorry, a Precision 4300.
Precision, okay. Well, let me look and see if I can find how to do the recovery. Dell Factory Image Restore. You should be able to just, there's probably a program. Let's see. If you do a Google search on Restore Computer Software Dell Precision 4300, you'll probably find more explicit instructions.
Okay, well, that's what I'm looking for.
That would actually make the computer more resellable. If you wipe the whole thing clean, I mean, you could sell it for one price, but if they could show somebody that it has a fresh, clean install of the operating system and all the original applications that were installed, that might make it a little bit more desirable to a potential buyer. But it
That's
should,
my goal.
Yeah. So I would try to do the restore. You didn't happen to create the restore disks when you bought it, did you?
Yes, I did.
Why don't you use those? That would do it. If you boot from the first disk, the Dell menus will take you through the process of just wiping the drive clean and reinstalling the factory image on it.
Okay. And approximately how long of a process is that?
Less than an hour, probably.
Oh, I can do that. Okay.
I mean,
enjoy your show.
Certainly, and what I would do just to make it, if you have a high-speed internet connection, what I would do is I would restore the image to it, and then, you know, just go ahead and take the time and run the updates and make sure that it's all patched to whatever the latest versions of everything is, and then I'll make it a nice little computer somebody will pay you $50 for.
Okay.
All right.
Thanks again.
All right. Thanks for your call. Bye. All right, 713-526-5738. If you want to be on the air with Technology Bites, getting some good calls tonight, some good questions. We always appreciate that. If you want to
See, when we help him sell his XP laptop, then
you can
the
pledge
person
next week.
He can call us.
Yeah. All right, 713-526-KPFT is the number to call. We got one call in the queue, and all the rest of the lines are open. Who do we have up next, Groovehouse?
Up next, we're going to speak with Jay.
Jay, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hey, how's it going, guys? Sorry, this is kind of cheesy to say, but I always wanted to say this. Long-time listener, first-time caller. So, you know, enjoy the show. Hey, guys, question about MacBook Pros. I don't know if y'all are pro or against.
We are pro-pro.
Pro-pro.
Awesome. I usually buy older MacBook Pros, like a year behind the releases, and I, you know, tend to keep them for about a year or two, sometimes 3-4 years. Well, the one I'm currently on right now is, I believe, a late 2010 model, and I'm finally able to buy, you know, a brand new MacBook Pro this year. And my question to y'all was, is it worth spending top dollar for a brand new MacBook Pro completely maxed out with a processor and hard drive and everything?
What are you going to use it for?
I'm an independent contractor. I do video editing, audio editing, stuff like that.
I don't think it's ever worth it, but if you've got the money, it's definitely fun.
Well, if you're doing video editing, you're going to want plenty of hard drive space, memory, and processing power. So is it worth it? Yeah.
And if you think about it, you can flip to the other side of the sales equation that you've been on. So you buy that top-of-the-line maxed-out one and use it for a couple of years. When you sell it, it's going to be worth a good bit of what you paid. And then when you add the money that would have bought you a used, you know, two-year-old one, you can go back and get another latest maxed-out one if you do it right.
Right, and if I don't keep it more than a year or so, basically, because that's the way I've been buying mine.
Even and if it's a couple of years, you should
the
you
resale
get
a value
good chunk
on a maxed-out Mac is it stays pretty high.
Yeah,
I've discovered I was able to sell my old MacBook Pro for a premium, I thought, when I sold it. I just looked at what they were going for on eBay, and I was quite surprised at how much value they took.
I had a client who sold a MacBook Pro that's, I think, like 3 years old, so a 2010, on eBay, and got, I think they got like over 700 bucks for it.
Yeah.
Which is about half of what they paid for it when they bought it.
Yeah, and see, the one I'm looking at right now would be the brand new 15-inch Retina with the, I want to say the processor was like 2.63 terabyte solid-state hard drive, yada, yada, yada. And I'm just thinking, will I have it long enough to, like, really use it?
Well, I can't answer. That's kind of a hard question for us to answer.
Yeah, and that's what I'm fighting with myself. You know, I don't know which way things are going to go.
Well, I mean, you could certainly, there's a couple of things you might consider. One is, do you really need the Retina? Because you can save a nice chunk of change with going with a regular display. I mean, it just depends on what your preference is in terms of what you're looking at. I like the Retina. I think it's a beautiful looking display, but I don't have one on my MacBook Air, and I'm completely satisfied with that. And I do a lot of photo editing on my MacBook Air, and I like the SSD. I like having that extra extra speed for my data access and having the computer boot up nice and quick. I like that. I like having the extra RAM. I think that makes a difference. And the faster processor always, you know, I've never met anyone who's said, you know, I really wish I'd have bought less. If you've got the money and you can afford it, I always say, buy, you know, set yourself a budget. Say, this is how much I can afford to spend on a computer, and then buy as much computer as you can get for that amount of money. Now, maybe you need to look, do you actually benefit from having the portability of a laptop?
Yes, okay. Definitely.
So, you know, because you know you're paying a premium just to have the portability.
Right, yeah. But it's in my line of work, it's completely necessary.
Right. You could take. So, I would also take a look at the refurbished offerings from if you're interested in buying Apple. Uh-huh. I bought a brand new iMac, and it was pretty specced out. I mean, it had the Fusion Drive, it had the extra RAM. It was a really nice piece of upgraded hardware that somebody had bought and returned, I'm guessing, and I saved $600 buying a refurb. Over what I could have spec'd the exact same computer out brand new, and it would have cost me $600 more.
Yeah, but that's kind of aren't you kind of worried that it's kind of a crapshoot? I mean, maybe there was an issue with the computer.
Warranty,
or
though, aren't they?
You still get the full warranty.
You still get the full warranty, and if you're worried about it, get the AppleCare. But, you know, I'm not really worried about that. When I see something like that, now, if I was looking at a base level model, just like, you know, like an entry level or even just one of the standard configurations, I might say, yeah, there's a possibility that somebody had some issues with that and returned it. But when I see one that's like been upgraded, that's had the bigger hard drive put in or the faster processor chosen, that's not one of the standard loads, I think somebody bought that and said, you know what, my wife's going to kill me. I need to return that. That's the way I see it. And like Pete mentioned, the warranty's still intact. Apple's real good about taking care of that. My brand new MacBook Air has been in the shop twice now with over $1,000 worth of repairs. And it wasn't refurbished or returned or anything. It just had problems. It had a bad system board and it had a bad display. $500 for each repair. That's over half the value of the laptop, but it was all covered under warranty. And yeah. And I was hardly inconvenienced at all with the repair.
Man, that's just errors that are issues that come with something that's mass produced.
Yeah.
Like, that's the risk of something that's mass produced.
Yeah, and you can't that to being whether it's refurb or not. It's just the dangers of anything that's under mass production.
I'm just looking for a MacBook Pro that doesn't, I don't need the Retina, and I don't want to spend the money on that.
Right. Well, don't spend the money on the Retina. Just get one of the non-Retinas that's and use the money you save off of not paying for the Retina to buy more RAM or get a bigger hard drive or a faster processor or all three.
And y'all don't have an issue with the new MacBook Pros not being what other guys are complaining about, being customizable as far as you able to change out the hard drive, you able to upgrade the RAM, stuff like that.
We're talking about not even keeping the computer that long, so why are you worried about that?
Yeah, I guess you're right. Yeah, you're absolutely right.
But, you know, I mean, I haven't looked at them. I swapped a hard drive on my last MacBook Pro, and it wasn't that hard. Maybe it's harder on the newer ones, but if you're buying a computer that's up to spec on what you're actually going to use it for and you're going to turn it around in less than a year or a year or so, I wouldn't worry about – I don't buy laptops for their expandability anyway.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And, yeah, if you bought an Air, you definitely didn't buy – yeah. It for expandability, because there is none.
My mind, when it deals with laptops, has never been like, you know, I'm going to throw in a new video card or I'm going to upgrade the modem or
RAM
like
or
that.
Hard drive is the most you'd probably want to push, you know.
Yeah, and that's usually what it is for me anyways. Right on. Well, I appreciate it, fellas.
All right, well, appreciate your call. Good luck.
Yeah, I'll take it easy.
All right, you too. Thanks.
Bye.
So our MacBook Airs, they're not quite beefy enough to be able to push the kind of stuff he wants to, I'm guessing, right? I mean, the MacBook Pro is just still leaps and bounds as far as processor RAM.
The MacBook Pro is still I've looked at some benchmarks on the new MacBook Pros, and they definitely kind of leave the Mac. I've got a top of line MacBook Air, and I ran a benchmark on it, and it does not quite match up to what the MacBook Pro.
I miss the speediness of it, but I don't know if I could go back to carrying a really heavy full size notebook. You know, I'm sure you're in the same boat with your Air.
I'm perfectly content with the Air. I mean, if I find myself wishing that it had more power or thinking it's running a little behind, I just go sit down in front of my iMac and remind myself why I bought a desktop in the first place. So,
Flick did the groundbreaker. He was the first one to come in with, you know, like, I don't need ports, I don't need drives.
Yeah, and I got the first generation Air, so it was even had fewer than the current ones do. I mean, it had the little drop down bay that had three ports in it, which was one USB port. An audio jack, and then the, like, it wasn't mini display, it was like micro display port or something. It was a weird
video connector. So you must buy another adapter display port.
Yep. Although I did come to the, like, startling realization that with my new iMac and my new MacBook Air, that I have no CD drives.
You didn't buy any of the external super drives?
I didn't buy a super. I mean, if I have to, I will, but I gave my old iMac to my wife and set that up for her, and it's got one.
Okay.
So in a pinch, I can use that one. But
you can always do that. Yeah, do the share.
I can share it over the network, or I've got a USB DVD that would probably work. But I was like, holy crap, I didn't notice it right away. I found a CD that I wanted to look at some files on, and I'm like, well, crap. So that was kind of disappointing. So I always think, if you're depending on too on how you're sharing media, I mean, obviously, if I just take any CDs that I have and copy the data over to a flash drive, I'll
that
be
happens
okay.
to me when I pull out like the 5 1/4 floppies, and I'm like, hey, what? I don't have a
USB drive in the drawer somewhere. Yeah, so you can't install AOL right now then without having to share a drive somewhere.
No, I can download it. I can install AOL from the web.
That seems...
You know, it would be really cool is if AOL was so bloated that it took up, you know, over 16 gigs of space, and they sent it out as a... on a USB drive.
Flash drive.
Yeah, that you could just blank and have a 16-gig flash
drive. I would much rather have a big pile of free thumb drives or flash drives than a big pile of, you know, bed coasters. That sounds awesome.
I already have a pile of thumb drives that I paid for, you know, because they keep getting so much cheaper for more capacity, so you end up with these where it's like, oh, a 2 gig. Oh, you just toss
the computer pile. Stores need to stop doing that. It's like, yeah, don't mind if I do 16 gigs for $1.99. And then, yeah, it's bad.
713-526-5738. If you want to be on the air with us tonight on Technology Bites, we're inviting your calls. 713-526-KPFT. Right now, all of our lines are open. We've got about 30 minutes left in the show tonight. Had some really good calls this evening, and we appreciate that, but we have time for more conversations this evening. If you'd like to be a part of one of those conversations, an instigator of one of those conversations, dial 713-526-KPFT.
I might still have a 64 meg or a 128 meg flash drive.
I've got some old stuff that I consistently pull out when I'm looking for like a thumb drive, and I'm like, oh, great, 128 gigs. I'm like, oh, no, that's an M. No.
Yeah.
I can put a couple of MP3s on here.
Why don't we throw them away? Why do we keep them?
I can't.
I've got stuff, too. I'm just...
Can't do it.
It's tough.
I still got milk crates full of cables that I'll never, ever, ever use. Yeah. And every time, without fail, once I throw something away, and then within a week or two, I need it.
Hey, Jay, you got a parallel printer cable I could borrow?
Licked it does.
No,
that's not a parallel printer.
No, that's a serial. That's a
VGA. It's a null modem cable.
Is it a null modem?
Yeah, because I've got a Cisco rollover and a null modem cable that I use to hook up to a USB to DB9 serial.
Mm-hmm. He's got DB9 problems and serial one isn't one of them. 713-526-573. I see the phone ringing. Groovehouse could turn his attention to that. And while we're waiting for him to screen that call, I have to tell you a joke. So a man walks into a bar and he pauses. At the other end of the bar, there's this guy with a big orange head. Have you heard this one?
I just read it. I don't understand the joke. Okay. You're going to have to explain it to me.
Okay, so there's this guy with a big orange head just kind of sitting there, mooning into his drink. So the man asks the bartender, say, what's up with the guy with a big orange head? The bartender says, it's an interesting story. If you buy him a drink, I bet he'll tell it to you. So the man walks over, introduces himself, and offers to buy a round. The guy with a big orange head says, yeah, I bet you want to know the story, huh? To which the man replies, sure, if you don't mind. The man with the big orange head sighs, you know, I've gone over it in my mind a million times. Basically, it's like this. I was walking down the beach one day, and I stubbed my toe on something. I looked down, and there was an antique brass lamp. I picked it up, dusted it off, and all of a sudden, an enormous genie pops out. The genie thundered, you have released me from my 10,000-year imprisonment, and I am in your debt. I will grant you 3 wishes as a token of my gratitude. The man at the bar is agape. The guy with the big orange head continues, so I said, wow, okay, well, my first wish is to be fantastically wealthy. The genie says, your wish is granted. And all of a sudden, I have rings on my fingers and a crown on my head, and my wallet is full of money and a dozen ATM cards and the deed to a mansion in the hills. I mean, I was loaded. So I said, amazing, okay, for my next wish, I want to be married to the most beautiful woman in the world. The genie says, your wish is granted. And the ocean parts, and out walks this gorgeous woman in this beautiful dress, and she takes my hand, and we fall in love, and the genie marries us right there. It was incredible. The genie booms, you have 1 wish remaining. And the man with the big orange head pauses and sips his drink. He says, you know, this may be where I went wrong. I wished for a big orange head.
I think I just got it. I was looking for more meaning in there than there actually was.
Yeah, that's a great
joke. But at least he still got money, yeah. and a beautiful wife.
Yeah. It's all perspective. What if you get pulled out of your thing now? You got a flash drive, I see.
Yeah. It's 128 meg.
Oh, that's nice.
I've got 100. I've got like 128 meg PCMCIA card storage card.
You got 8 meg CCF card.
I think I've got a 16 meg compact flash. No, it's 8 meg compact flash drives at home.
Really?
Yeah.
All right. 713-526-5738.
I still have a couple of 5 1/4 inch drives at home. If, you know, you ever have.
If you know what he's talking about, wink, wink.
All right, Group House, I see you have a call in the queue.
Yes, we do.
Who is it, and what do they want?
All right, up next, it's Michael.
Michael, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Good evening, guys. Just driving down the road, first time I had ever heard you on. I enjoy your show.
Well, appreciate it.
Oh, this is a perfect situation. So what did you think the show was about while you were driving down the road and heard us?
When you first tuned in.
Yeah.
I thought it was an Apple show.
I was driving through Houston, turned on the radio. There was this program about Apple computers.
I thought I was at the Genius Bar. Awesome.
All right, it's kind of a running joke with us when we get people that find us for the first time. So thanks for
whenever we go off on some tangent, we always at the end, a lot of times we end up saying like, yeah, I was driving through Houston and I heard this show about, and it's whatever we were talking about.
Which wasn't computers.
Which has nothing
generally.
To do with our show.
What can we do for you?
Well, back in 07, I bought an XP and got it all loaded up and everything, a Dell laptop, and have used the heck out of it. But XP is dying, and I need to go on to something else, and I'm trying to figure out where to go.
Okay.
I like the laptop. I'm retired, but I like being able to, you know, be downstairs and want to go upstairs and watch TV or do something and take my laptop with me. And just I don't use it for much more than email and just basic internet stuff. I've got a ton of apps, but I don't use 90% of them.
Well,
so,
is the XP computer giving you any grief? I mean, aside from the fact that XP has been discontinued or is no longer supported, does the computer still work?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's still a sweet computer. I'm just...
You're not obligated to get a new computer just because Microsoft isn't... I mean, it's strongly encouraged that you get a computer that's got a more secure operating system on it, but... You're not required by any, you know, unspoken law to take this working computer and toss it just to get a new computer.
Okay.
So, I mean, you could keep using it if you like. But if you're interested in getting a new computer, a lot of what's being sold right now, at least in the box stores and online, if you're looking for a new laptop running Windows, is going to be Windows 8.
Okay.
And it's a bit of a, it behaves differently than Windows XP. I mean, it's still kind of the same. You still have a web browser, still use an email program, that sort of thing. But the interface has changed some.
Well, I hated it because I started out writing machine code, some years back.
Mm-hmm.
and writing an assembly language. And so the, you know, back on the almost the Commodore 64 days. And the more we advance, the less I can do. You know, there's more and more and more interface that, oh, we know what you want to do, so you can't do this, we're going to do it for you type operating system.
Well, that's the very nature of the GUI, though, isn't it? I mean, basically you get an icon instead of a command prompt, and you click on that icon, and it's the equivalent of writing out a command line that says, you know, execute program, blah, 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 or whatever. So, yeah, there's kind of more of a – but that was the same with XP. I don't think Windows 8 and XP differ – that greatly from, you know, from each other in that regard. I mean, they're still basically a point and click kind of operating system.
Okay. Well, and that's kind of where I was going is the 8, the difference between 8 and 8.1, is that, I mean, is they're both 8?
I would definitely go with 8.1 because it brings in some of the functionality from Windows 7, which was more closely mirrored XP.
Okay.
But you're still going to have a little bit of a learning curve. You know, if you think about it, one of the things someone told me that I thought was really helpful in trying to understand how Windows 8 works if you think about all those tiles in Windows 8 as being like when you click on the start menu in Windows XP or Windows 7, you click start and you see a window pops up that's got all those icons for all your apps and everything so that you can then click on them and use them. So you click start, all programs, whatever. Right. Well, in Windows 8, instead of having to click start, all of that stuff's just already up and in front of you. So you just click on the program you want to use. You click on Internet Explorer, it's right there. You click on your mail, it's right there. So it's not really that bad. I mean, you just have to kind of approach it a little differently. But I think Windows 8.1 is a fine operating system. If you know how to use XP, I think you can get a handle on Windows 8.1 pretty quickly.
Okay. Are they getting, is Windows getting any better as far as malware and virus?
It is getting better, but it's still not immune. It's still a big target. So there's a lot of people that, you know, the people that write that nasty code are targeting Windows 8 now with a vengeance. So there is stuff coming out for that. If you're interested in kind of getting away from that, and since you're already going to be making a bit of a change in how you work with your computer, you might look at getting a Mac laptop.
All right.
Well,
I've worked on Macs a couple of times, and it's like Arabic to me.
All right. They
read from right to left instead of left to right.
You know? I just wanted to put that out there as an option. Windows 8 tends to be a little less vulnerable. It's got the user access controls and things like that definitely mitigate some of the spyware risks, but you still have to be careful, and you still have to keep antivirus software installed on the computer to keep yourself as safe as you can be.
Right. Now, one kind of off the wall question, what do you think about Linux?
Well, you're talking about how Greek the Mac is to you. I mean, the Linux is going to also be a challenge. I think it's a great operating system. There's a number of different flavors of Linux, and it's certainly a very effective piece of software. Go ahead, Derek.
If you know how to burn a CD, there are things called bootable distributions or like bootable disks for Linux to where you can actually burn out an ISO onto a CD and then put the CD back in the CD tray, reboot your computer, and if you can boot from CD-ROM, you can try out Linux without having to install it or do anything.
That's true, yeah.
And get used to it for a few weeks.
And that's called Linux Mint and Ubuntu come now. They're, when you download them and install them, it boots up, and then you have the chance to install it to the hard drive, but you don't have to.
Yeah, if you can mint Linux, that's decent. Go check that out.
Well, let me clarify that for you. So what they're talking about is that you make a bootable CD that allows you to boot the computer up, and it, instead of loading the files from your hard drive, it loads everything from the CD. And so you can actually experience what it's like to use Linux. But when you turn the computer off, it just goes away until it's not like it doesn't erase any of the data on your hard drive. It doesn't store anything permanently on your hard drive. It's like test driving the operating system.
It may ask, do you want to install me? Just say no, because you don't have to install it to run it. Or just running from a CD-ROM than it would be if you actually installed it to your hard drive.
Right.
So I think it'll speed up a little bit if you decided to go the Linux route.
But if you're a command line kind of guy, you might enjoy Linux.
Okay. What were those websites again?
Well, there's one that's called Mint. If you just go
Mint
online
Linux.
And Google search Mint Linux.
And Ubuntu, like Ubuntu.
Okay, Ubuntu.
All right.
And there's two distros of Mint. One is Cinnamon, and I forgot what the other one is. But I think one of them's KDE, and one of them's
Spice.
GNOME, which is two different desktop interfaces, GUI interfaces, and that's just a matter of preference.
KDE feels very like Windows 98, Windows XP to me still, whereas GNOME is its kind of own beast as of late. But you can CDs are cheap, burn both, play with both before you make a decision.
Okay. Hey, thanks a lot, guys. It's real informative, and I've enjoyed listening to you.
All right. Well, thanks for your call tonight.
Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
So what was his unhappy about Mac?
Yeah.
He just found it very alien. And
just the interface? Because the thing is, the Mac is Linux. Mac is Unix.
But the OS,
I thought it was a bit of an odd, direction.
Because you pop a terminal, and especially, like, if you install... homebrew or whatever, like you have access to like all the Unix packages, every Unix thing you could want to do.
That takes a little bit of know-how, though. It's not as bad as like when you had to install ports or what have you, but it's still
ports.
Yeah, it's still a little bit of knowledge. And things can
kind of one web page, and you go through the web page, and now you have Mac ports or Homebrew or whatever you want to use.
All right. Groovehouse.
Yes.
Who's up next?
Up next, we're going to speak with John.
John, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Good evening, gentlemen. Great show tonight so far.
Thank you.
Hey, so gentlemen sitting... I have a better genie joke in a bar for you, by the way.
Is it suitable to be on the air?
It is indeed.
All right. I'm willing to give it a shot. Don't disappoint me.
All right. Well, and you've got the five-second delay for Richard Pryor anyway. So, gentleman sitting in a bar asks the bartender, hey, you got any entertainment in this place? Bartender reaches down and raps three times on the bar. And
a six-inch pianist?
Yes.
All right. Sorry. I just knew that joke.
All right. Well, I'll let you do that one later then.
All right.
My X-Speed machine crapped out step by step, and I'm not able to replace it yet. I'm just too cheap is probably the best reason why. But without a CD drive, CD-DVD drive, is there a way to get Linux on there from a thumb drive?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
You can make bootable USB drives as long as the computer supports booting from a USB.
If it's 7 or 8 years older than you, most of them do.
Yeah, you get some BIOS. You could use selective. Is it a Dell computer?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, if you hit, like, I think F12 brings up the selective boot menu on a Dell, and you can choose, if you have the USB drive plugged in, it'll let you select that as your boot option.
Now, I do that when I'm powering up?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think, just check, if you Google search boot. Ooh.
Go check, this is really cool, not to interrupt Jay, but there's something called Unibootin. It's UneBootin, or something along those lines. And what it is a program that you can go download, and then you get a thumb drive, and you can actually say, like, hey, I want to install, I want to put this ISO on there, I want to put this ISO, whatever ISO, they've got like 100 almost.
It's UnetBootin, UnetBootin.
Oh, it suddenly makes sense to me now, yeah. So you're booting over the net. So what it does, though, it's a really lightweight program. You run it, and then when you decide what it is you want to install, it will go grab that ISO, it'll burn it to the thumb drive, it'll totally prepare the thumb drive to boot that. Whatever it is you want to boot, and it's really easy. It's much better than having to go download it, prep it, make it bootable, read the instructions and whatever. It just knows how to prepare anything you want.
What are you talking about?
Okay.
UnetBootin, being able to prepare a USB stick to boot whatever operating system you want, even to the point where I think if you've got a large enough USB stick, you can load multiple operating systems on there, and you can walk up to a computer and say, hey, I want to boot into BSD, or hey, I want to boot into Mint, or hey, I want to boot into Kubuntu, or whatever you want to do.
Oh, wow. Okay. And then next question, and pardon me if y'all have already answered this. I'm not able to listen as often as I want to. Is there a Linux flavor that is similar to the flavor that XP gives me?
Schnozberry?
Schnozberry?
That's a joke, yeah. KDE, running KDE, anything with KDE probably. And I know there are probably some Linux variants that are supposed to look like XP.
I think Cinnamon Mint. Is KDE based?
Okay, and Fedora, what KDE is the option other GNOME than based. GNOME? What is GNOME?
GNOME is. Oh, go ahead. Click the
time. Go ahead. It's just GNOME is just another graphical
window
manager interface. Just like there's a bunch of them, but the two major ones for a number of years have been KDE and GNOME. Those are the two big ones for. Early on, it was KDE got huge, and then it started losing favor, and a lot of people went to GNOME. And then in the last year or two, since they started doing GNOME 3, some people started backtracking and going back to KDE.
I was on GNOME 2 for a while, yeah. I liked
GNOME 2 a lot, but GNOME 3 annoyed me.
A lot of people are saying that XP, if you're going from XP, Linux Mint is the way to go. Like Flicted say, go with Cinnamon. With Linux Mint, and it looks a lot like XP. There's even an XP compatibility mode, and it actually looks like XP. Complete with the start button. That's
which
a little
one?
Bit,
which one would I crazy. Avoid if I am no good with command line stuff?
Slackware, OpenBSD. Just get something that has a graphical boot. I mean, really, I think that Linux Mint is the way to go, especially if you're coming from XP. Linux Mint Cinnamon.
All right. Cool.
All right.
And Mr. Lee, I can't wait to hear how you tell the next genie joke.
We'll see how it goes.
All right, thanks,
bye.
Gentlemen.
All right, bye.
So what was the it's the GNU one? The GNU distro. It wasn't. I mean, it still used the Linux kernel because they never got heard working. But
as far as GNOME goes, or what are you talking about?
No, just the like. Oh man, back in the day, like when people talked about like you know which distro you should pick and how difficult it was to put together. You know, Slackware was
LFS. Really, is
not horrible, but FreeBSD was considered more difficult.
FreeBSD was tough. OpenBSD was even tougher because they printed the installation instructions on the CD cover and they were tiny.
But there was one that was the GNU one, and it was like just.
I don't know if GNU ever had like did they have a Linux distro aside from you know the whatever was built around the herd kernel. LFS is really the true. If you want to go like the hardest way to install Linux, LFS distro, and that's Linux from scratch, and that's where you actually compile every single thing on the system you need all the way. But you get a wicked fast system that runs just for your hardware. So, you know, so more or less what you do is you spend about 20 hours to eke out about 1 hour of savings over the life of the machine.
Well, it's always had to, I used to run FreeBSD, and always had to recompile new kernels by hand.
You got another
had to do
genie
that in a
joke.
Long time.
Well, you only
get to let the genie out of the bottle, or Jay let the genie out of the bottle.
You only get to tell the joke if I haven't heard it already.
I've got a bar joke. A man walks into a bar and says, ow.
Or if the joke's so short that Jay can't stop you.
All he could do is give me a disgusted look. It was already too late by that time.
Dog goes into a bar with his got his arm in a sling. Says, I'm looking for the man who shot my paw.
Oh. Okay, that's cute.
All right, Groovehouse.
Yes. See, if we expand this from a show about genie jokes to a show about...
bad jokes?
Like, some walks into a bar, we could probably get a long months or years out of that. But just genie jokes, I'm not sure how far we could...
No, I don't think it should just be genie jokes.
No.
All right, Groovehouse.
Yes.
Who do we have up?
Up next, we're going to speak with Garrett.
Garrett, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hey, guys. Loving the show.
Thank you.
I just had a question. About yesterday, my computer stopped picking up on the wireless. It sees the wireless signals, but when I tried to troubleshoot to see why I can't seem to connect to those signals, I get a diagnostics policy service is not running, and I can't seem to figure out a way around it.
So are you trying to connect to your Wi-Fi or to public Wi-Fi or what?
Yeah, I've tried connecting to my Wi-Fi, my work's Wi-Fi, my school's Wi-Fi. Nothing's getting through. It sees every single the SSID of every single one of them.
And this is Windows 7, right?
Yeah.
Home Premium?
Did it used to work?
Professional, I think.
Okay.
Did it used to connect to the Wi-Fis?
Yeah, it did it up until about 2 days ago.
How old is the computer?
Can't be more than about a year or so.
One thing I've seen, I have seen where, like, uninstalling and reinstalling the Wi-Fi drivers will clear that up.
Yeah, I tried that about an hour ago.
You went in the device manager and uninstalled the Wi-Fi and then rebooted and let it redetect?
Yeah.
Have you gone to the manufacturer's website to see if there are newer drivers?
I haven't been able to get onto the website.
Well, you might. I'm sure the computer does it have an Ethernet port?
It does.
Does your router modem have an Ethernet port?
I gotta get it in there.
Do you have an Ethernet cable? Those three things right there, you could get on. I bet you get on the internet with it. I would say, you know, when you're troubleshooting a network problem, unfortunately, you know, not being able to get on the internet obviously is a problem. If you have another computer that can get online, you could download the driver to that. But I would try a new driver or connecting up to the Ethernet cable.
Yeah.
But I wondered if you have other issues because what did you find on the diagnostics?
Not so much on the diagnostics, but it looks like if those drop out, you can actually add those back in from the command line by typing net local group administrators / add network service and / add local service. I found that in a Microsoft knowledge base. I would just, if you, I search for it by Diagnostics Policy Service not running on Windows 7, and it leads to a, you know, TechNet Microsoft article, and they're saying try that.
Yeah.
And a lot of people are saying it's worked for them.
But, I mean, the fact that that's not running and the fact that it won't connect to the Wi-Fi is it seems that what seems to me would be indicating that there are there might be a, some other serious problem going on, either a driver issue or even worse, some kind of software corruption with your operating system. But I
worst case scenario.
I'm sorry?
What would be the worst case scenario?
Reloading the system with the factory software back
or
to scratch.
People are also saying in-place upgrade.
On a Windows 7, I haven't been able to in-place upgrade Windows 7, but maybe that would require an install disk. Is a computer a year old or older than a year old or less than a year old?
I suspect it was a refurb, so.
Oh, so the warranty's gone?
Yeah.
It's a desktop or a laptop?
It's a laptop.
Laptop, sorry.
Wi-Fi. More than likely. The
ProBook 4440.
I mean, the cheap, ugly way around it is you can get a USB Wi-Fi dongle for, like, under $20.
I'm assuming you've rebooted since you started having these problems, not to sound
Yeah, several times.
And when you try to connect to the Wi-Fi, you click on there, you see the Wi-Fi access point, you click connect. What does it do? Does it give a failure message?
No, it it'll ask me for, like, a logon password for mine.
Uh-huh.
And under it in. Starts running for a bit and then says, can't get it, can't get anything, troubleshoot it.
Why don't you try disabling the security on your Wi-Fi access point and go with a straight connection and see if you can connect that way?
All right.
You know, and just to see if you can get connected. That would, because you might be having a problem with the security protocol you're using to try to connect. If are you choosing the right one? If you have WPA2 enabled on the access point, is that the type of Wi-Fi you're trying to use on the laptop? Did that maybe get out of whack? If you've got a profile saved for that, if you could try removing that profile and starting from scratch. You know the Wi-Fi profile where you could if your computer will save those?
Yeah.
You could try deleting them, but it may just be a problem with the way that it's trying to negotiate the connection.
Yeah, I was thinking that at first, but then it did it with every single one of them.
Right.
It's policy service not running message every single time it airs out? Or you just
They didn't get that when it airs out, because when it doesn't connect, it gives you the option to run it, and he tries to run it, and that's when he gets it.
That's when you get the okay, service not running.
Yeah, I don't have a quick answer for you on that. We are running out of time, but I would definitely try updating the driver on the Wi-Fi. Just get the latest, greatest. Also, maybe do a BIOS update. And see if that helps. All right, Groovehouse, who do we have up next?
Up next, Joke Hour. We're going to
Joke Hour.
We're going to take Gary.
All right, Gary, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
So this guy is down at a beach party. They're at the beach, and he's walking along the shore with some friends, and he sees this bottle floating in the water, and he goes over and picks it up and starts wiping the algae out off of it, and poof, out comes a genie. The genie says, I will grant you one wish. But you must choose infinite wisdom or infinite wealth. And the guy thinks a minute, and he says, well, I'll take infinite wisdom. The genie says, granted. So all his friends gather around to see what his first pronouncement with infinite wisdom is. And he says, I should have taken the damn money. See you.
All right, thanks for that. Bye. All right, Groovehouse, who's up next?
Up next on Comedy Hour, Amateur Comedy Hour, it's Stacy.
All right, drop the mic.
I wanted to tell the joke about the cow that walked into the bar.
The cow that walked into the bar?
Bartender gave the cow a beer. The cow said, I said, hey, bartender.
Oh, okay.
Yay. A gorilla. A bear. A bear goes into a bar, and he orders a drink. He's like, you got a drink. And the bartender thinks, wow, a talking bear. okay, so we're just going to go along with this. And so he gives the bear his drink, and he says, okay, that'll be $10. Bear pays him the money. So bear finishes the beer, and a little while, you know, orders another one and says, I'd like another beer. And the bartender says, okay. Gives him the beer and says, $10. He says, bear pays him. Bear finishes the beer, orders another beer. The guy finally kind of musters up his courage. He says, you know, we don't get too many talking bears in here. He says, well, at these prices, it's no surprise. All right, group, how soon do we have up next?
Up next, we're going to speak with John.
John, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hey, thanks, guys. Okay, so you answered my question. I'm looking for cinnamon mint. Now I need to know, how do I tell if I'm 32-bit or 64-bit?
Are you at a Windows machine right now?
Are you at a Windows computer? If you click, if you click start and right click the My Computer or Computer icon, and select properties.
And do what?
Select properties.
Yeah.
Should have that information right there. It says about this PC, and it should tell you what operating system you're using and.
About this PC.
Or if you also look up the specs on the processor. Online on a Google search, it should tell you if the processor is,
and it's easier
if it can do 64-bit. But yeah, Windows should tell you.
Windows will tell you.
Although you could have a 64-bit computer and have a 32-bit OS installed, right?
He could, but likely he doesn't.
Okay, so I don't understand what that number is in reference to. Is it hardware, software?
No, it's hardware. You have a processor. There's 32-bit architecture and 64-bit architecture.
Okay, so it's probably not profiles.
Oh, I don't have Windows running on my...
It should just be like what Jay said. Start, right-click computer, and it should be on the...
If you click start, you see over in the right-hand part of the start menu, there's an icon that says computer.
It's not the applications list. It's in that second row of icons.
My computer.
Mm-hmm.
Right-click my computer and select properties.
Uh-huh.
And it should have a section under general about what version of the operating system you're running. Is it XP or is it...
Windows? XP, yeah.
Okay, when Barrett asked you if it was Windows 7, you said yes. It's probably 32-bit.
Yeah.
There's not very many people I know in the world that are running 64-bit Windows XP. So it's 30. Okay. Chances are you're 32-bit.
You say somebody else had called in earlier and mentioned DistroWatch as a website to go to look for...
Yeah, it ranks distributions, and you can read reviews and see what's on the rise and see what's popular and all that kind of stuff.
DistroWatch.
Yeah, load the 32-bit version just to be on the safe side. It won't, if you don't know the difference on that and you've got an older computer, chances are it's running XP. Chances are it's 32-bit architecture anyway, so.
Right on. Thank you, gentlemen.
All right, thanks for your call.
I have a way to beat the genie thing where you can't wish for more wishes. First wish, wish that each wish be considered separately. They usually say okay. Second wish, losing my voice, wish that all the wishes be calculated in absolute value. They usually won't see a problem with that. Third wish, you wish for 1,000 fewer wishes. I think it works.
Did you find that online?
It's also an SMBC comic, yeah. A couple days ago. SMBcomics.com. The comic
All right.
The better.
Well, we're going to just... I feel like you should just drop the mic.
With 10 seconds, you can do it.
All right, you're listening to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
And he's
Groovehouse.
See you next week for more Technology Bites.
Keeping abreast of your health, Breast Cancer Awareness Group is hosting a men's health seminar on Saturday, April 26th from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. at Mount Ararat Baptist Church. The location is 5801 West Montgomery Road, Houston, Texas, 77091. The seminar is to inform men on breast, prostate, colon, and testicular cancer awareness. Please come to support Keeping Abreast of Your Health's vision to educate, support, and encourage healthy living. This is commercial-free, listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio, 90.1 KPFT Houston, kpft.org online.
Do you or someone you know own a local dining establishment? KPFT has a pledge drive coming up, and each drive, restaurants in the area feed our phone volunteers who give of their time to help KPFT reach its goals. Donations of food by these establishments are tax deductible and help community radio in the process. We also thank your establishment on air. Call 713-526-4000 for more information on how Houston eateries can lend a helping hand to KPFT. Ideal locations will be close to downtown Houston and be able to provide meals for 12 hungry volunteers. Again, that's 713-526-4000 for more information. This is 90.1 Pacifica Radio, kpft.org, twitter.com/kpft, facebook.com/kpfthouston. We'll be right back.